Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what the fucksters, what the fuckaholics? I am Mark Maron. This is WTF. Obviously, I'm not at home in the garage. Where am I? I'm in a hotel room in Chicago at the James Hotel. The day after I did my special taping last night in Chicago at the Vic Theater. God damn it, I fucking love Chicago. I love it. I mean, I've been here before and I chose to shoot my special here, but Chicago's a great city and the special taping went amazing. I'll tell you about it because I'll walk you through it in a minute. Today on the show, I talked to Constance Zimmer, the actress who was on an episode of Maron. If you watched the premiere episode, actually, of Maron, she played my age-appropriate girlfriend briefly with the child. One episode, and that relationship ended. But you may know Constance Zimmer from many things. House of Cards. She's Janine Skorsky in House of Cards. She was in The Newsroom, Grey's Anatomy. She's been in a lot. You would know her. You would know her. So I talked to Constance Zimmer in a few minutes. That's happening. Let's go over my shit. Can we do that? I need you people in Portchester, New York, in Huntington, New York, in Red Bank, New Jersey, to know that I'm performing there. I know it's going to take some effort. I know a lot of you don't listen to this show today, but I'm reaching out to you because I got shows and I want you to see me if you want to see me. June 25th at the Capitol Theater in Portchester, New York. June 26th at the Bam Howard Opera House in Brooklyn, New York, which is selling well, and I'm excited about that. It's going to be a big-ass show. Saturday, June 27th at the Paramount Theater in Huntington, New York, out on the island. And Saturday, June 28th at the Count Basie Theater in my birth state of Red Bank, New Jersey. Go to WTFpod.com/calendar to check tickets, to get tickets, to get the links to tickets. And let's do it. Let's have some shows. I'd like you to come. I'll figure out other ways to reach out to you, too, because I am my own promotional machine. Aside from being a shame machine that seems to be fueled solely by deep dish pizza at this juncture in this hotel room. So Friday, flew to Cleveland to do that show. I've been to Cleveland a few times, and I know Cleveland. I know there's a couple of great places to eat in Cleveland. I like doing shows in Cleveland. I'm at the Playhouse Theater in Cleveland, which is a complex of several theaters. And the theater beside mine, the night that I was doing my show, had Dennis Miller and Bill O'Reilly doing their comedy duo tour, amplifying fears and stirring up shit for the angry people who think it's all the liberals' fault. That's a good night of entertaining. Let's just get you all worked up about how the country's going to pot because of those lefties. So there wasn't a lot of fear of the crossover audience. I don't think I lost any audience to that show. But it was interesting since I don't really talk about politics, you know, at all anymore. And also, it's interesting because the conversations you can have with people, you know, when you don't bring that into it. Me and Chris Garcia, who has been opening these dates with me, these few dates, were out in front of the hotel. I was smoking a cigar. He was having a cigarette, and there was some dude, some older dude, who was just sitting there smoking a cigarette, and we got to talking to him, and he had just gone to see O'Reilly and Miller, and he was just talking about he lived down in North Carolina. And I didn't bring politics into the conversation at all. I knew where he stood, certainly. I didn't feel any reason to sort of, you know, engage in that. And because I didn't, we had this interesting conversation about the time he spent in Vietnam, this time he spent in the Marines. I mean, this is in 10 minutes, just having this this kind of, you know, fairly deep life talk with this guy who I think at a different time, if I had engaged immediately in politics, it would have become contentious and gone nowhere, and it wouldn't have been a sort of a moving conversation. Sometimes politics just fucks up the conversation. So the show in Cleveland went great. Very grateful for the show in Cleveland. It was an amazing warm-up and a great show. And then I flew to Chicago on Saturday morning, and Chris and I got here about 2, had some lunch, and then just sort of locked in. I went in and did the sound checks. The set looks great for the special. And Bobcat had this idea. He brought up Joe Swanberg, who lives in Chicago, so I'm going to have maybe him, we should tell him that you're performing, he'd come watch the show. I'm like, maybe he could shoot some stuff. And Swanberg, who you guys know from this show, was like into it. So, because we didn't know what we were going to do to bookend the special. So Swanberg comes down, and we set him up with a camera. So he's following me around before and after the show, in the dressing room, in the theater, eating pizza right before a special taping, which was unnecessary. Someone brought Giordano's. Is that how you pronounce it? They brought that pizza in, you know, an hour before I was supposed to go on. And I have no willpower, so I'm shoveling deep dish into my face an hour before I'm going on. Because in my mind, I think that, like, I don't want to admit this, but I knew that I shouldn't eat that pizza before I go on for the first, you know, we did 2 shows for the taping, but I did, and I think it was to protect myself. Like, if it didn't go as well as I thought it should go, I could always blame the pizza. Now, it's not on me, it's on the pizza. Yeah, but you made the choice to eat it. Hey, don't talk to me like that. Who's having the conversation? We are, me and me. So, the tapings were great. Chicago was a great choice, and the audiences were spectacular. I really think that we got the special in the first show. I'm doing the special for Epics, by the way. So, of course, Bobcat was like, I think you nailed it, man. So, you know, just have fun the second show. So the second show was like an hour and 35-minute loopy fest where people in the audience just felt it okay to begin conversations with me. It was sort of like up and down and in and out, and it was I was riffing a lot, doing stuff I'd never done before. And then, of course, I get off. You know, there was a point where in the middle of that taping, Bobcat on the Voice of God mic says, move the mic stand for continuity. Like there was going to be any continuity between these two shows. No fucking way. It was crazy, a little crazy. Then after that show, Bobcat's like, I think that's the special. I'm like, what are you talking about? The first one was tight and nailed everything. That one was all over the place. He's like, yeah, but I've never seen anything like that. And I'm like, oh, come on. Come on. But again, gracias to the great city of Chicago. I really do like it here, but I think if I lived here, I'd die very quickly because of you know, the pizza problem. Because I'm strung out, man. I'm strung out. All right, so now we're going to talk to Constance Zimmer. Lovely, talented, engaging. And I want to sort of move you towards her things. She's on a new Lifetime series called Unreal, which airs Monday nights at 10 Eastern. She's also in the movies Entourage and Results, which are both out now. We talked about Results with Kevin Corrigan. All right, so let's talk to Constance.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Zimmer. Aren't you a voiceover artist?
I'm trying to be one.
Are you?
Yes.
I'm a
transformer.
That's right.
Oh,
which one?
The female. Or Strong Arm.
Yeah.
Strong Arm.
How many of those have you done?
We've almost done 2 seasons. So that's like, I don't know how many that is. You know,
who makes those?
Cartoon Network.
Is that a good paycheck?
Not really.
Right?
No, because I'm nobody in the voiceover world. So
yeah.
They're like, we're going to give you
scale.
A dime.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I just did my angry raccoon voice this morning for a new Nickelodeon show.
Oh,
you want me to do it for you?
Yeah, I
want to
hear it.
What are you doing?
That's fantastic. You know what's funny?
It's amazing I can slip right into it.
You can.
It's a challenging voice. What? Get out of here.
It's weird though that they would choose for you to be an angry.
I don't understand
cartoon.
That at all. I don't understand why I get typecast like that because I'm so sweet and sensitive.
You are,
and everybody just goes has me do angry. So everything's coming out at once. So you're not busy at all. You're just sitting there watching things happen, wondering, everyone thinking you're so busy, but you're like, I have nothing happening.
No, it looks like I'm super busy because it, you know
it's all done. The
it's
most
all
important
done.
Was
now
your episode of my show.
Well, of course. I mean, that's kind of what started it all.
Yeah, that was the kickoff.
That was the kickoff. Because, by the way, I was at a party last
night.
Come
on. Is this a good story?
It's kind of a good story. Yeah. I was at a party last night for the premiere of the TV show that I'm starring in. And a guy came up to me and he said, "Hey, you're the girl from the Maron Show."
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
See? So now that's what I'm going to be recognized
for. This was a party for the real thing?
For Unreal on Lifetime.
Unreal.
Unreal.
I do no research, so we're just going to explain everything to me.
You will be addicted to this show.
Really?
You will be.
What pitch it to
me? So it's behind the scenes of the making of a dating reality series.
Like The Bachelor or something?
Yeah, like that, or Beauty and the Geek, or Who Wants to Marry Harry, or anything that is a situation of normal people having cameras follow them around while they find
true
love.
But this is behind the scenes.
This is behind the scenes.
Which is what makes it a comedy, I'm assuming.
Correct. Well, very dark. Very dark, dark
people
comedy.
People die?
You have to watch the show. I'm not going to reveal anything here, even though I should.
What is your character?
I played the executive producer, director of the reality show.
So you're like a monster.
I am a monster.
Yeah.
I'm very much typecast because that's what I am in real life too.
No, you're just kind of a monster.
Kind of.
I don't think you are.
Thank God. I'm not a monster.
You seem very practical and sweet. And,
yes.
But like at any moment, something horrible could happen.
I would be the reverse. I would just start crying instead of yelling.
I know. We talked about that once before. I can't believe you're not a yeller with all your intensity. Why are you a crier? You should be a yeller. You're powerful. You should be yelling.
Because I yell. Like every character I play yells.
Why do you think that is?
I have no idea.
So you work it out on camera? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. I work it out when then it doesn't come back and bite me in the ass. I get paid to yell. And in my house, I don't yell.
You just cry and...
I cry instead.
And just clam up, passive aggressive.
No, okay. We talked about that too when we were working. I'm probably a little passive aggressive. My husband would definitely say that.
Your husband's a director, right?
Yes. Director, writer, photographer, producer, whatever. Well, let's just give him all these hats just because.
What are his big hits?
Big hits. Have you seen the Listerine commercial?
Yeah, great. Which one? The one where they swish it around with their
That's
face?
Right. Yeah,
they
exactly.
They make a face?
He right now has mostly been doing commercials, but he's done a couple of short films, but he is right now attached to direct a couple of films, and he has a pilot in the works. So, he's
finally,
very busy.
Right?
Finally, my God, get him off my couch.
So, right? And I can say something other than commercials. Finally.
Know.
Doing something. Did you see the Listerine commercial? Wait, I've seen all of them.
Well, that's what sucks, by the way. Let's talk about that and this fact that who watches commercials anymore anyways?
I ended up watching a couple last night because apparently when you DVR the Mad Men finale, you can't fast forward through them.
See, and that's what they're trying to do now.
But I got a couple laughs, honestly. It was the Heinz commercial with the people in the mustard outfit. Did you see those?
Yes.
It's kind of funny.
See?
Right, you didn't get a laugh?
I did. I got a laugh right now.
I know.
You reenacting it.
I know now that Heinz makes a yellow mustard, and I'm not a yellow mustard fan, but maybe it worked on me.
So you didn't know that Heinz made something else besides ketchup?
No, I know I figured they made other things like Heinz 57 sauce, but I think what they're trying to do is push like French's out, to make people aware that this yellow mustard business can be a Heinz companion. That's to their ketchup.
They look well together.
Yeah.
They're the same bright yellow with the bright red.
Yeah. Yeah. But Listerine, I use Listerine. I don't know if your husband had anything to do with that.
No.
But wait, so this Unreal, what happens? What happens? There's sex and sordid business?
Oh my God. There's
a lot of it,
so
right?
Much sex.
Are you having sex in there?
People are like blowjobs, sex.
Oh, good.
Drugs.
Yeah.
There's drugs.
Like which kind?
There's cat fights.
Yeah.
Girls.
Yeah.
Slapping each other.
This sounds like something everyone's going to watch. America's going to watch it.
They're going to watch it.
On
There's
Lifetime.
Girls in bikinis.
Is that easy to find Lifetime?
I would hope so.
I don't know. I'm on IFC. No one seems to know where it is. I can't even tell
Here's
my parents
though,
where it is.
But nobody even watches shows anymore based on where they are.
That's what I hear.
Everyone's like, just tell me what time. I'll put it on my DVR. I'll record it. And then I'll watch it when I want to watch it.
I don't do that.
Yeah, I don't. I like to watch things when they're on.
Me too. Or on demand. I don't DVR things.
No.
If the station doesn't have an on-demand situation, I'm in trouble.
Okay. Well, Lifetime has an on-demand station.
All right. Then
so
I'm watching it. Okay. And you're in the Entourage movie?
The Entourage movie, yes.
Because you were on the TV show.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I just talked to someone else who's in that movie.
Who did you talk to?
He was just here yesterday. Haley Joel.
Oh, Haley Joel Osment.
Haley Joel Osment.
He is so fantastic in the movie.
He is?
Oh, my God. He plays this horrible, rich, spoiled brat.
Yeah.
Billy Bob Thornton's son, he plays in the movie. And luckily, I had most of my scenes were with him and with Billy Bob, who's fantastic in the film as well. And, of course, with Jeremy. All my stuff is always with Jeremy.
Yeah. Was that the first time you worked with Billy Bob?
Yes. Yes.
Was that an experience?
He is fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, in between takes, everybody would just crowd around him and just want to hear stories.
Okay, and he's got a pretty slow delivery, right?
Yeah. I mean, everything is like this dramatic pause.
Yeah.
You know, and he had just finished working on Fargo.
Uh-huh.
So he was telling us all these stories about working on Fargo. And, you know, but that's the thing about Entourage is it brings together such a bizarre collection of actors, directors, producers, and then you're all in the same room together. And it is what they show on the show is all of a sudden becoming that, you know, behind the scenes where when would I ever be in a situation where I just would be hanging out with Billy Bob Thornton and Haley Joel Osment and all in the same day and in the
I
same scene.
I think you
scene.
Could probably more easily hang out with Haley Joel Osment whenever you wanted, probably.
I mean, look, he sees dead people, okay? So, I mean, let's just talk about
but
that.
I bet you he's not a nicer guy, but probably a little more accessible. I have a feeling that Billy Bob, you know, you'd be like, you want to hang out? And then, like, you'd probably second guess it. You'd be like,
eh. No, I actually...
I got to call him. I want to
do
the show.
Yeah, I got the idea that he's pretty. He's pretty approachable.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. He was super excited to be in the movie,
too. Very
intense.
He frightens me a little bit.
I think he seems less intense than he was to all of us, like, years ago.
Okay.
When he was, like, drinking blood and stuff like that.
But, all right, yeah. So that movie, like, that's a full cock press. A lot of men.
Cock press, but into women. I mean, there's a lot of bikinis. And, Talk about bikinis and hot girls and nudity and sex. I mean,
let me ask you a question. I read this article about Maggie Gyllenhaal talking about the women in Hollywood and how they get short shrift as they get older. I'm not even going to talk about it.
You know. I'm going to say that I think that was true like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I think it's changing.
Yeah.
You know, Meryl Streep, she's funding like an organization to find women who will write female characters over the age of 40. So she's put all this money into this organization.
Within the context of scripts or just
anything.
Uh huh.
Females over 40 in television or movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think
TV and movies.
TV and movies to try and get people to write more for those women.
Mm-hmm.
Because I will tell you, since I turned 40, I've gotten the best parts I've ever had.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I didn't think that was going to happen. And my husband, the Listerine guy, film director, you know, he had said to me, because I thought the same thing. I thought my career was over when I was 35. And I thought, oh, my God, this is it. People are tired of me. They've seen me for far too long. And now I'm old. And everyone wants the younger Constance Zimmer, whatever
is
that
one,
fucking means.
Is there?
I hope not. Because she's going to take all my jobs. And, you know, and my parts have only gotten better. Since
like
I turned 40.
Like when like which ones are like because what are you being cast as specifically because you're sexy, you've got brains, you've got an edge to you.
Well, you know, yes and no.
You're not playing a lot of moms.
No, I'm not, except on your show.
But that was like that was the closest to your real you ever that you've ever been cast, I think.
Well, without the yelling, let's just say that again.
That wasn't really, you only yelled once.
Yelled a lot. By the way, it starts with me yelling in the kitchen on your show.
I don't, was that yelling or were you just sort of laying down the law?
You know, I mean, a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Okay.
No, but like Janine on House of Cards was not necessarily a woman in her 40s.
Right.
She was a woman that had worked her whole life and I don't even know if we told her age, you know, because I don't really think it mattered. But
what's her job on that show?
I was a journalist. I was a White House correspondent, actually.
Right.
You know, but that was fighting the good fight for what journalism used to be and what it is today. Like a 40-year-old journalist fighting with a 20-year-old journalist who's doing Twitter and social media and...
And misspelling.
And misspelling,
not
exactly.
Not copy editing.
That's what I'm talking about.
This is the end. The age of copy editing is over.
Right.
Anytime I see an article about me, which happen occasionally, mm-hmm. I have to correct things and I have to write them back.
I had the same thing. Well, and mine's already in this. It was already published and they sent
in the magazine?
Sent me a copy of it. And I was like, there's misspellings and there's inaccuracies. Like, who's checking this shit?
It's fucking a nightmare.
No, everybody's just like, go, out. Nobody has any patience. But I'm also crazy like that because before I was an actor, I used to like coordinate these huge celebrity events that raise money for charity. And one of my main jobs was always making sure that everyone's names were spelled correct. Everything about them was correct. And that would take like 2 or 3 days of cross-referencing and all this
it's
stuff.
It's a job.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one does it anymore.
No.
So you played a journalist. Like, I haven't watched this series. I'm sorry. I need to watch it. Everyone loves it.
Mark.
What do I watch? What do you watch? What do you have time to watch, really?
I watched Marin.
Right. And you did a great job. And that was funny.
No, I mean, I'm with you. I don't watch a lot of television.
I mean, I watched the Mad Men. But like, honestly, when it came back, I was like, I thought it was over. Was it over?
No,
And I then
know.
I watched Better Call Saul.
Better Call Saul is awesome.
It is awesome.
Last Man on Earth was fantastic.
It. Really?
Yeah, that I got through very quickly because they showed like 2 episodes at once. So it really, it pulled you into it that you wanted to watch it then the next week and watch 2 episodes at once.
Togetherness, I watched.
Togetherness,
it was
yes.
A little painful.
It is. Because it's so true.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. Like, I keep my, I don't get involved with it. It gets too messy with humans.
I know. Humans are really fucked up. They really are a mess these days.
Yeah, but it's such a short, we all fuck up the same way. But it was a little painful. And I talked to Alinsky in here and I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was really good. Maybe it was too real, but I love that heavyset guy. He's funny.
Oh, so great.
I'm sure he doesn't like being called the heavyset guy.
Yeah,
exactly. The large man.
The large man
on
the show.
Bald man.
Yeah.
I don't know where the fuck he came from, but he's funny.
Well, because he's Mark's friend.
Right, but he's funny.
Yeah.
How does a guy that funny not show up before?
You know why? Because this is the only thing that is good that is happening with all of the Hulus and Amazons and all of these places where now people who you feel like come out of the woodworks, but it's not. It's just they haven't been given the opportunities because everybody wants the same people over and over and over again. You know, people reuse talent all the time.
Well, yeah, and I think that's why that and also the limitations, like we were talking about before. So Meryl Streep's like funding these, you know, make some older characters.
Well, because she's like, come on, I know you guys can write them, so I'm just going to fund it. I'm going to put down all this money, and I'm going to have people be specific about writing incredible female characters over the age of 40.
Isn't it weird, though, because like when you watch movies and stuff, there's like you see these movie stars who are around women for like 5 years, maybe. And then you're like, what? Where are they?
Yeah.
What happened to her? And then
but
all of a sudden, Renee Russo shows up somewhere, and you're like, oh my God!
Yeah.
And she's still good.
How amazing was Nightcrawler?
Yeah.
Oh, that movie was good.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I love it because I watched
Were
that.
You in that?
I was. No, but it's very funny because I watched the movie because people told me that it's like the movie version of our show, Unreal, because it's behind the scenes of these, you know, late night news networks.
Right.
And everybody said that I'm the Rene Russo character on our TV show and Jake Gyllenhaal is the Shiri Appleby on our TV show. And so I was like, I want to see what that is. What's the movie version of us?
It was a little menacing.
It's very menacing.
Like Gyllenhaal was like, that was some scary shit.
It was the best I've seen him.
Psychopath.
He was fantastic.
Not a sociopath. Yeah. Sociopaths are like people we know.
Yeah, exactly. Like something we could turn into in a couple of years, probably.
I think I know a couple.
Yeah, so. If you lock yourself in here, that could happen.
So, well, I guess like, I don't know. I guess that's true that in movies there's just not a hell of a lot of, like just women characters in general of a certain age. It's kind of weird when you think about it.
It is true because there's better now. They're better in television.
Yeah. Television's better in general. And you're like in every show. I noticed
that. Not every show.
No, like,
but
you're like one of those people.
I'm on some good shows. I can say I'm very grateful that I can say that.
Newsroom. That was good.
Over 40.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
Just saying.
You're like a stud. You know what I mean? You're not. I think I would be criticized for saying that. See, that's just the kind of attitude men have about women who are older and have...
And are strong.
Strong. Yeah. You were on Grey's Anatomy, Alana Cahill. How many episodes of that did you do?
5.
That's exciting, though, right?
But again, I was a ball buster on that show.
Another ball buster.
Yeah.
Entourage, you were on a lot.
I was on for 6 years. Yes.
And you like Jeremy?
I love Jeremy.
Come on. Just.
No, I'm being 100% honest. I really do.
He's an intense fella.
He's an intense fella.
Been around a long time.
And an incredible actor.
Yeah.
So he's always, when I'm around and we're in scenes, he's 100%. Like, mm-hmm. He's there, he's focused. And I can't say that about everybody I've worked with.
What?
Like, yeah, exactly. I'm not looking at you in particular, uh-huh. Mark.
Yeah, what?
No, he's, I think he is the epitome of being misunderstood.
Yeah, I don't know him, and I haven't even, he seems like he's a little too guy's guy for me, but he's a good actor. I always like watching him.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard anything too bad about him.
No, I mean, look, everybody wants to say shit about anybody, yeah. because it's a story.
It's that town.
That's
this
right.
Is the town for
the
it.
The town for talking shit about yeah. people. But no, I do love him. And I think that what was so great about, Dana and Ari, who we were on the show, was that I had known him for years before that.
Yeah.
And I had worked with him on The Ellen Show, when Ellen had
uh-huh.
a sitcom
uh-huh.
back in the day.
Uh-huh.
And so I've known him for so long that when we got to work together again, there was already this friendship that we had.
Well, it's sort of interesting. There's like a whole crew of people like you who have been, who actually work, always work. And you kind of run into each other here and there, on TV shows. Because I always assume that there's some sort of community of actors and that, people who do movies together. With Haley Joel Osment, it's so how often are you in touch with Tom Hanks? You were in Forrest Gump when you were four, so do you keep up that relationship? No. You just go to work and then that's it.
Yeah, and because, there's some relationships that I have kept up, but mostly with the women.
Right, but if you keep working, you run into people.
Exactly.
There seems to be a crew that works.
Exactly. Or you do a TV show, and then 2 years later, they make it into a movie, and then you're all forced to be together again, whether you like each other or not.
But there's no bad ill will on that set?
No.
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 Everyone's having a good time.
Everybody is so excited.
It's like Sex in the City for men.
Exactly. No, but it is.
It kind of is.
It's fantastic.
Right? Yeah.
I still can't believe it. I see the billboards for Entourage, and I'm like, oh, the show's back on. I don't realize
movie.
No, we're in a movie.
I just watched a movie with you in it.
I'm not in very many movies. Was
Results.
It Adam Carolla? Oh, Results.
I'd never seen this filmmaker's work. I kind of like the movie.
Oh, you would love Andrew. Andrew Bujalski has such incredible movies. This is his first movie with real big celebrities.
Yeah.
And it was so cute because
Guy Pearce,
Kobe Smulders.
What is she from?
How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, okay.
And the Avenger movies.
Right. God, I'm so out of the fucking loop.
I am too, by the way. The only reason why I know any of this is because, I know Kobe actually as a friend.
Why are we out of the loop?
I don't know. I don't have time to go to the movies.
Is that wrong?
No, that's not wrong.
How old are you?
I'm 44.
Uh-huh. So I'm 51.
Wait, that's when you're supposed to say.
Oh, you look 35.
Thank you. it takes a lot for me to go to the movies these days.
Oh, someone told me I should see the Mad Max movie.
Yeah, somebody said it's a. It's
you too?
Yeah, same thing. Maybe we should go together.
Okay.
Oh my God, let's go see Mad Max
let's
together.
Let's do it now.
Let's do it. We have to go to a matinee.
Yeah.
Because my nights are full.
With the child and the husband?
Not even with the child and the husband, because I have four projects all coming out within
a week. Oh, you got to watch your projects.
I got to watch my projects. But Results, I'm so glad you liked it. I love that you saw it.
It's compelling because it's like a real indie movie. Like, it's not following any rules and it seems to, go weird places. Got some poetry to it.
When they had called me and just said, hey, they want you for this movie. And I read it super fast and I was like, wait, there's how many sex scenes with Guy Pearce? And I was just like, okay.
I didn't see one of those yet.
They're in the montage.
There's a montage. That's right. You make
with
sex
heavy
faces.
Breathing. That's right. Sex faces.
They are good.
Yeah.
How is that?
By the way, you still have to get naked just for sex faces. So just realize that it's not like I had on, fully clothed.
No, but not totally naked for sex faces, because that seems like you've
no,
been
you
taking
have
advantage
like
of.
You get nipple covers.
Really?
Yeah. It was the first day I met Guy, and then I had to just take off my clothes in front of him.
How was that for you?
Well,
Guy's all right.
Guy's pretty cute.
Yeah, he's a weaselly guy. If you
he
like
had
that
to take
weaselly
his clothes
guy.
Off too.
Oh, so, really? All the way, all of it?
Well,
Did they put a dick tape on him? dick cover?
I know, right? Where are the dick covers?
It would
have to be gigantic, right? I mean,
I don't know.
Not that I
Guy
saw
would
that.
Be happy to hear
Not
that.
Not that I saw yeah. that, but I mean, as in general speaking.
I don't know. I when I did sex scenes, I wore boxers and,
yeah, exactly.
and also briefs.
Yeah.
And taped it down.
Taped it down, right.
Sure, just in case.
That's right. Some guys wear cups.
Oh, really? Like the
yeah, like in
baseball? Like the like
right, so that like even if there is something two body Barbie, parts meeting,
it's a cup.
There's a cup, so it's like I don't know.
Have you had that experience personally?
I did.
You grinded a guy with a cup?
I did.
What movie was that?
That's was on Unreal.
Oh, really? So this is recent.
This is yes. Mm-hmm.
Why
this
did so the guy said watch. I got to wear a cup? Who decides that?
Yeah, the actor.
Hmm.
I think, I mean, look, it's a personal choice. You know, sometimes it gets a little, you know, some people like to put pillows in between themselves.
Oh, because they're afraid they'll get a boner?
Probably.
Yeah.
I think that's more uncomfortable than like actual like, oh, this is kind of fun. And then all of a sudden.
Well, I did the sex scenes in, like I found, I was putting pressure on myself. You know, like I.
I want to know how. How were you putting pressure on yourself?
Well, we're doing these sex scenes, and I had the moment where, like, it was fine. There, you know, we being appropriate and being actory. You know what I mean? And kissing and uh-huh. stuff. And then
did you slip the tongue?
No.
Oh, good. You're not supposed to.
No, I didn't know what to do. The first time I did it, first season, I asked her. I said, "What do we do? Is there tongue involved? Do you want to do a trial run?"
You want to go practice in the bathroom?
Right. Yeah. Do you want to try it before we just do it? And she's like, no, I don't think that's appropriate. And I'm like, all right, I don't know. And then we ended up doing it, no tongues. And then she said, look, you know, sometimes you might get a boner, but it happens. Just it's okay. And then once I was out there, I'm like, why am I not getting a boner? You know, like I was like, I should be getting a boner.
Right. Maybe you were just such a good actor.
Yeah, just shut it down.
You were just like, shut that down there. Just, you know, lay low.
Like
dude.
I felt I failed sexually right. in a situation where I was not supposed to have that.
Yeah, but it's a lot of pressure. I mean, it's not like it's just you and one other person.
Right.
I mean, there's a whole camera crew and
right.
lighting people and makeup and hair. I mean,
you can't go that. Like, you know, you can't. Yeah.
Well,
but so how was the cup situation?
I was fine. I mean, listen, for me, I would say because I was the aggressor in the situation,
right.
That it allows me to feel like I'm not invading anyone's personal space.
Was he married too?
No.
Oh.
Craig Bierko. Do you know Craig Bierko?
Yeah, I met him before.
Yeah, he's on the show.
He's a very tall man.
Very
right?
tall, yeah. Yes. Also an incredible actor. But yeah, I, you know, it's... It's an uncomfortable thing to do sex scenes with, you know, a crew of 20 people
did
around
you, kiss,
you.
Did you kiss too?
Oh, yes. We have to do all that stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
And make it look like your mouth's open? Open your mouth?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Did you put tongue?
No tongue. No tongue, Mark Maron. No tongue.
Okay.
But it's funny because I feel like when you're single and they're yeah. single, you're
why
like,
not?
Well, why not? It's no harm, no foul.
Well, let's talk about that period. Of the life where you were just running around Hollywood out of control.
I was a little crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
When did you start the acting? Like, because when was this period of time where you were organizing charity events?
That was before I was a quote-unquote working actor. That was my job. My job was...
Oh, and you were going out on auditions, but you had that job.
Correct, yeah.
But where'd you grow up?
I grew up actually in Newport Beach.
Oh, way out there?
Yeah, so I was born in Seattle. Was there till I was five. Came to Santa Monica for like kindergarten, first, second grade.
Why
Orange
the move?
County. My mom, my parents got divorced.
When
my mom,
you were five?
When I was five. I was two, actually.
When they got divorced?
Yeah. But then left Seattle when I was five.
Seattle's nice.
Seattle's great.
Is your dad up there?
It's very rainy. Yes, he's still there.
You talk to him?
Yes. I see him, if I'm lucky, you know, once or twice a year.
Uh-huh.
We meet in Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
If you can meet in Hawaii, why wouldn't you?
Does he go to Hawaii often? Or
yes.
Just,
yes. Oh. Yeah. He has a place in Maui.
What's his deal? What's he do, that guy?
He's retired.
Yeah?
He's 80. My dad is
an old guy.
Yeah. I think he's 83.
I guess mine is too. Oh, yeah?
At this
do you have
point?
Other siblings?
I have a sister, 3.5 years older.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, it's, you know, growing up in, like my mom moved around for the public schools.
Oh.
You know, she was a single mom raising two girls. And
so she wanted you to be in good schools.
Correct.
Is she still around?
Yes, she's still around. She lives in Venice.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
In a nice place?
Yeah, she lives in a... she's been there for like 25 years.
Really?
Yes.
She bought a house there?
No, she has an apartment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in this like amazing community in Venice.
A community?
A community, because they are all, you know, Green Party people.
Uh-huh. That's so your mom's an old hippie?
Yes.
Ah.
An old German hippie.
German?
If those two go together.
Like German?
Yeah, I'm full German.
Really?
The way. Yeah.
Your dad's German too?
My dad's German.
You speak German?
Yes, I
Stop
speak
it.
German. I do.
That's the most horrifying sounding language.
It so can be pretty.
So you, can it? Make that happen for me.
I'm going to try and find something. Du bist wunderschön.
Oh, that's cute.
Oh, what I said you're wonderful.
Oh.
Oh, see?
There's something abrupt about it all.
Well, it is. Well, I mean, because you're probably just being very generic and thinking of the people that are like, ach, nicht, ja, ich bin ein Berliner.
I think I'm just being Jewish.
There what... you go. Oh, that's what just happened. I see.
No.
Do not hate. I cannot.
No, I'm kidding. I have no, but I have, like, if you think of Italian or you think of French, even Russian. Russian's abrupt. Chinese, it's difficult. But yeah. German, it seems close. Like I can make things out. Like it's familiar
right.
in a way, but it's just a little brutal.
I agree. It does have a harsh
tone to it. So did you grow up eating sausages and... Like,
no, because my mother was more the anti-German, constantly doing stuff that wasn't German, trying to not be where she was from. So, you know, she was in San Francisco. She was trying to be an actress.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so
she
we weren't
of the
raised that
thing?
Way.
Like a-
yeah. I mean, we had carob chips instead of chocolate chips. We had granola instead of sugary cereal.
Does she let her hair remain gray?
Yes, she actually has. Right. She went fully gray.
Yeah.
She used to have like strawberry blonde hair. And and yeah, now she went fully gray. It looks fantastic. And I love it.
What part of Germany are they from?
My mother was born in a very small town that used to be Prussia.
Yeah.
And it's called Königsberg. My father was also born in a tiny, tiny town in Germany that also I don't think
exists anymore.
Exists.
Did you go visit those places?
Germany. No. No.
But you
I mean,
speak
one
German.
Of them,
Did
my dad's
to
town is completely like it's there's maybe one or two homes that are there that were there when he was a kid. Otherwise, it's
have you been to Germany?
Place. Oh, yes. I was shipped off to Germany every summer
for your grandparents?
6 weeks. Yes. From age 5 to age 18.
Oh.
To be with our grandparents who didn't speak any English. So that was where we did our German training, our German speaking and all of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny because now as a parent, I realize, wow, that's amazing that my mom did that. She was a single parent, shipped both of her daughters off for 6 weeks
she
every
needed a
summer.
Break.
Yeah, she was like, get the fuck out of my house.
Some of us had to go to camp. You got to go to Germany.
I got to go to Germany. That's right.
So where did your grandmother live?
She lived in a tiny town called Bad Schwartau.
But it's close to a city?
South of Hamburg.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we would take the train, go to Hamburg, buy amazing clothes, you know, come back to L.A.
That seems great.
It was, in the moment, yes and no. You know, I missed my friends. I would leave to Germany. I'd come back. I had boobs. You know, it was like I would become different people when I went to Germany and then I'd come back.
But at least when you got back, you got to see, like, I think I'm winning. Like, I'm beating you with the boobs.
I'm beating you with the boobs and the Benetton because Benetton was all over Europe.
Oh, really? So you were ahead of the curve on Benetton?
I was. Very colorful clothing.
So you grew up all in Newport Beach?
Yeah, from 6th grade to 12th grade is when I was in Newport Beach. And then I had to get out of there. And I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts out of high school because I knew when I was a senior in high school that I wanted to be an actor.
Where's that?
That is
right here?
Used to be in Pasadena.
Right.
Yeah, and then I think it moved to Hollywood.
Were you going in Pasadena?
Yeah.
So down the street?
Yeah.
Kind of.
That's right.
And you were there for 4 years?
No. I actually, it's funny. I did 1 year and I didn't get asked back.
How'd you scare them? What happened?
You know, all of us who didn't get asked back decided that they felt that we were good enough to be let out into the world. Into
who
the
are
industry.
They? Yeah, there's others?
There's others, but a lot of them actually don't act anymore. It's funny. They all
Smart
stopped.
Ones.
They all, yeah, the ones Bales. They were like, I can't do this anymore.
It's a fucking ridiculous profession.
Yes, I know.
But when did you know you wanted to do that shit?
When I was a senior in high school. I did Grease was my first play I ever did.
Rizzo?
No, no, I was Patty Simcox.
Okay.
The obnoxious cheerleader. And now I would probably play Rizzo.
Uh-huh.
But back then, no, I was like cheerleader. You know, I was in drama. I was that girl.
And you were singing?
And I was singing and dancing and doing high kicks. Do you know, I was training for the Olympics in gymnastics.
When you were a kid?
When I was in like third and fourth grade.
And have you tried to do any of that recently?
Yes, I
do
have.
A little mat
makes
work.
Me very makes me very flexible.
Get on the do the horse.
Yeah, the horse.
Yeah,
the uneven bars. The uneven bars, uh-huh. And some floor. I was very good on the floor.
Yeah,
yeah.
Was that the
I was very good.
Was that your thing?
That was my thing.
Could you do?
But again, I developed. I got boobs, and it slowed me down.
Right. But gymnastics is very, it's very specific. It requires a lot of intense training.
Yes, and I was done.
Could you do the poom, poom, poom? What are those called?
Were yes. you backflips, back handsprings.
Handsprings, back, yeah. Like the whole run of the mat?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You could do it?
Oh, 100%.
That must be exciting to be able to do that.
And now you should see me trying to teach my daughter how to do a cartwheel.
And you can't do it?
You know, and she's like, Mom, I don't understand. How do you get your legs so straight?
You can do a pretty good cartwheel
still? Oh, yeah, 100%.
But you can't do a backflip.
Oh, I could. If I went.
It's like riding a bike, kind of, you mean?
It is.
Right. Muscle memory.
Yeah, I mean, it's muscle memory. It's strength. It's your body just knows how to go back there when you have to.
How old's your daughter?
She's 7.
Just the one kid, right?
Just the one. I only need one.
That's enough?
You only ever need one.
How is she doing? Honestly. How are you guys getting along? Good?
She's kind of a bitch right now.
Oh, really?
I mean, I that might sound a little harsh, but I feel like somebody handed out a memo in first grade and said, all right, bitches, it's time.
Yeah.
It's time to become that, you know, because they look to teenagers so much. And I don't know why, but they start taking on the personalities of what teenagers are doing that a 7-year-old shouldn't be doing, you know.
Is that new, though?
No.
Did we do it?
I'm sure
it's
we did.
7?
We have a lot more. The kids today have so much more influence than we did as kids.
Influence in general?
Oh, my. I mean, the
in
internet alone.
Oh, right.
iPads, computers, television.
Oh, you
what's
mean they've got,
television?
Right. They've got a handle on things.
Oh, and it's right. Like, it's in their, in
it's
the palm
bizarre,
of their
right?
hand. Yeah.
I didn't have any control of anything.
No.
Could barely handle being alive.
No, exactly. Well, and what did we have? We had
what grade is that?
We had 7. Like 3 channels of television.
I think it was better then.
Back in our day.
What grade is 7? 7 years
first
old?
Grade. First grade.
I have no fucking recollection of that.
I was in Santa Monica at the time. But I mean, I don't remember who I was as a person at all. That's all I keep saying is like, she's first never going to remember any of this.
I think 3rd grade is about where it starts, where I have nice pieces of memory.
Yeah. I remember in 3rd grade, I got exposed to by a man on the street. Mm. And that's like my one memory of myself.
You saw
in 3rd grade.
Your first stranger cock?
Yeah, stranger cock. The stranger cock. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Did you run?
Yeah. No, well, you know, because those days you walked to school. It didn't matter how far you lived from the school. Like I walked by myself to school.
Right.
In a quaint little town of Fountain
Valley.
3rd
grade.
3rd grade.
Yeah.
And walked to school and somebody had pulled up on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And rolled down his window and said, excuse me, I'm looking for my dog. I've lost my dog. Have you seen my dog? And I said, no. I said, what does your dog look like? And he said, he looks like this, and just opened his jacket and he was completely nude.
Uh-huh.
Giant boner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what'd you do?
I just moved away from the truck very fast. And I think instead of going to school, I walked back home.
Quickly? Yes. Or did you try to keep your cool?
I did. Just, isn't that terrifying, though?
It is. Cocks are very terrifying.
Especially stranger cock.
Stranger cock when they're surprised, when they surprise you with them.
They're just like, let me whip this out.
In an inappropriate, molesty way.
Oh, yeah. God. That terrifies me. It never makes I don't want my daughter to ever walk to school alone.
Yeah, no one can walk anywhere alone.
No.
Yeah, it's a different time. We've grown to believe that they're just everywhere.
They are.
They are.
Stranger cock is everywhere.
It is?
Yeah.
I guess so. Well, now you can just go online and isn't there like a website where you can see who the sexual deviants are in your neighborhood or the
But that I can't do that. They're probably everywhere and then I would never leave my house. You know,
never let your daughter go outside.
No,
that's for sure.
No.
Well, this is taking a turn for the.
No, why? How did we get to this?
Because we were talking about our memories of as children.
Right.
And I said third grade, and you were like, "Yeah, the only thing I remember from third grade is this guy's dick in a truck."
That's right.
But did you seem to have a pretty good attitude about it. Didn't fuck you up too much.
That still has yet to be seen. I'm still young, Mark. Okay, let's be honest.
So, all right. So you're jumping around on mats. And then you get into song and dance?
Yeah, well, because what's very funny is that I got tired of working out. I was just like, I can't. There's got to be something more exciting that I can do in front of an audience that doesn't require working out like 18 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know?
So you realize that the real desire was to put on a show.
That I liked being in front of people.
Right.
Yeah. So then I moved to dance, but then I didn't like dance because it was working out and it was being in leotards, which I hated. I was like, no more leotards.
And repeating moves to music.
No. Yeah. So then I didn't like that. And so then I saw that they were auditioning for Grease. And I was a cheerleader at the time, and I said, I'm just going to go and try out for this part of a cheerleader. And because Grease was one of my favorite movies, and Saturday Night Fever. Hello.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And so, I auditioned for it. I got the part. And then I was like, I don't have to work out.
Were you getting some laughs, too?
I was getting laughs.
Yeah, that's a big moment.
Yeah.
Getting the laugh.
It's the greatest feeling ever.
Yeah.
The best. And then I was like, this is it. I love it.
And how much theater did you do?
So high school I did Grease and I did Peter Pan, where I didn't play Pan. I played Tiger Lily.
Uh-huh.
And
you didn't
get
to fly? Did you fly?
No. Tiger Lily doesn't fly. Oh. But whatever. She's an Indian princess.
Yeah, it's good.
She doesn't need to fly.
Sure.
But after when I went to the American Academy, then that's what I did. I just did a bunch of theater in LA and that's what people would come and see me and that's... You know, how I got an agent and
really?
Then, yeah.
And when did you get the agent? From what play were you doing?
I was doing Catholic schoolgirls you played two characters in this play. You played a Catholic schoolgirl and then you played a nun.
Yeah.
And I played a German Nazi nun, which if you can imagine when my father came, I spoke the German. I used a German accent.
That must have been impressive to the agent.
They were like, oh, look at her. She's so versatile.
Doing voice work. She studied German dialect.
That's right. That's right.
Uh-huh.
And so I did that.
What about your dad, though?
Well, my dad came and he didn't think it was very funny.
Was it a comedy?
It was, yes. I mean, everything was very over the top. The characters were very over the top, mm-hmm. You know, but no, he didn't think that was very funny. That's all right. You can't please everybody.
He got all German on you?
He's like, I don't understand.
Yeah, right. Did he say that?
He did.
He spoke with a German accent?
It's weird. Yeah. He does speak with a German accent.
What was his job?
He was a structural engineer.
Right.
So he retired at the age of 60.
A structural engineer.
Yeah, he built incredible buildings in South Africa, all over the world. And there's still buildings up in Seattle that are buildings that he designed as well.
So he works with an architect.
Correct. Yes.
He's the guy that says, no, if you do that, it'll fall on people.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
It's important.
It
feels like a German job to me. Like,
yeah, because you have to be. Yeah. It's because German, I mean, we are so like OCD, like crazy.
Control freaky?
Yes. I was going to try and like go around
that. Yeah, I know.
But no, I'm pretty much, I am a control freak. I think I'm going to admit it right here on your show.
Wow. Big news.
First time.
Breaking TMZ, Constance Zimmer, control freak in quotation marks.
I'm trying to get over it though. I'm really trying very hard.
How do you do that?
I'm not quite sure because it's not working.
Like, but you're aware of it? How does it manifest itself where you're like, I got to stop this?
Just letting people do what they're going to do, allow them to make mistakes and not trying to control them to not.
So you're basically talking about your husband and your daughter.
Yes, exactly. No, I'm pretty sure I do it to my friends too.
You do?
Yeah. But, you know, I'm a loving control freak.
Uh-huh.
I just want everybody to be great.
Uh-huh. Oh, is that it? And if they're not, you're like, okay, well.
Oh, you can go work on that. We tried. We tried really hard.
And you failed. You failed miserably. It's horrible.
Yeah. No, look, that's the one thing I like about getting older is I'm realizing all of my flaws and I'm going to be at one with them. Because at this point, if you can't be at one with who you are at this late in the day, like
sure, but being does that involve trying to fix it? I mean, you can accept it.
Accept it. I think accepting it and acknowledging it makes me, I think, just not
sure
do it as much because I'm aware of it.
Yeah, my mom got better.
Yeah.
Yeah, she wasn't great.
Was she a control freak too?
No, she was, I don't know, not really a control freak, but she was a little detached or something. What was it? I don't know. Whatever it was, she made an effort later in life. It wasn't controlling. She has she's an eating disorder. And she gave it to my brother. She gave it to me. So we're all sort of weird. We all have this horrible, paralyzing body dysmorphia. She just destroyed our confidence.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, here we go. This is the moment when Mark cries.
Yeah, I'm not supposed to cry. But she can't put that back in the, that's.
No, that's there.
Yeah. But she seems to be a little better at saying things like, I'm proud of you. And, oh, that was good. And,
Because then it's too late and then you don't want to have regrets.
Right.
But that, I feel that as a parent. It's very stressful. Nobody writes a book about that shit.
About
how much you can fuck up your kid.
They write ones about how to, like, supposedly be a good parent. But don't they? Aren't there?
Yes and no. But it's statistical. It's like, don't spank them. Well, okay, we know today it's wrong to spank your kids.
Right.
Back when we were growing up, they were spanking the shit. I mean, my husband was beat with a stick that he used to have to go get out on the farm. He had to pick his own stick that he would switch, he would then be beat with. Like,
right.
It's just a different time. We're raising kids in a different time, but there is no book about, if you do this, it will result in this.
Right.
It's just, don't do this, but do this. Mm. And there's nothing about the consequences of it. So, and we're all, I think, and this is, I'm just speaking for myself, but I'm far more aware of the things I say, the actions I take for my daughter, and how they will affect her in the future. Not even today. I don't think about today so much. I think about, wait, if I tell her that now, that's going to go into her brain. And then when she is a teenager, she's going to go back to it. So,
but do you ever check yourself in terms of like what you're saying, where it's coming from emotionally within you?
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yes. Like,
and you you always say you don't want to do what your parents did to you. You know, it's all about, I'm not going to be the parent. And there are times when I catch myself doing things that my mom did or my dad did. And
that you think fucked you up.
Yes.
Like what?
I mean, I think more with my dad, it wasn't what was said. It was what was not said.
Right.
Because he wasn't so much a part of raising me. So I have definitely a thing with men. I still don't know what that thing is. But, my sister's a therapist and she always says to me, you really should go into therapy and talk about the fact that we didn't, really have this father figure, so to speak.
With men.
I don't know. That's what I mean. I've labeled it as that. Yes. I mean, I've called it a thing. I've gotten that far. See, I'm slowly working it out in my later years.
Right. But okay, so you don't want to be emotionally detached from your daughter. And what'd your mother do?
My mother, I can't really complain that much about because she is why I think I am as independent as I am and how much I don't think I need men or anybody else but myself.
Does your husband know this?
Yes, he does.
I have no need for it whatsoever. Rather, you just...
No, he actually, I'm going to say this, and I'm being honest. Yeah. This is not to like cover my tracks, but I will say that because this is my second marriage, I didn't get the first one was not, didn't go right.
How long was that one?
That one, well, I was with him for 5 years, but the marriage lasted for 6 months.
Wait, when did that happen?
Wait, let me say the good thing first, though, because it does kind of have to do with the first marriage. He was a big special effects makeup artist. Interesting.
Go ahead.
You're like, let's look that up on the computer.
Good one?
No, but the good one.
What's a good thing?
Well, Russ, who is my husband today and who is really the only husband that matters, is that, being with somebody, because I know you talk about this a lot on your show and the dating and women and relationships and how they're so fucking hard and all this crap.
Yeah, it's crap, but
it's true. And you know, it's hard sometimes. And they're hard. By the way, they don't ever get easy.
Great.
You know, because the good ones are worth fighting for and the good ones require work.
Ugh.
But I will tell you that it's, when you get to a place, and I think you and I kind of touched on this when we worked together, was when you get to a place where you are good with yourself,
right?
Then the person that comes along is like, it all works.
Right.
Because you just can't keep searching for yourself and other people.
Right.
And hoping that they will fulfill it.
Right.
So Russ is has been the man for me.
So you feel separateness. You don't feel like you're trying to resolve something.
Correct.
With him.
Correct. He's like everything that comes into the relationship with him is an added bonus.
Right.
You know, it's all there. It's already there. All the groundwork and everything is there. And then everything else is just like, oh, this is amazing. This is added. This is whipped cream. This is, you know, cherries.
So you're not playing out an old script that's sort of doomed to cycle out.
Right.
With the first husband, that was just a mistake. Ultimately.
Well, it was not a mistake. It was a...
How old were you?
I met him when I was 24.
Yeah.
I was very young.
And you were working on a movie?
No, but I did meet him on a job. You know those Duracell commercials? That was the plastic family. They were called the Puttermans, and they had batteries in the back of their backs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it wasn't a Duracell, they like fell into food or whatever.
Were you one of them?
I was the daughter.
Okay.
In that campaign.
Uh-huh.
By the way, that's a boost to your ego when your big job you get, you're covered in prosthetics.
Yeah.
But no, I had met him on that job because he created the whole concept of these Puttermans, these
and that was so impressive
people.
To you that you had to just jump that guy. You're like, you're a genius. Like,
yeah. He is a mad genius, and he really is.
Still,
you guys 100%. We are friends. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's great. But I wouldn't take that time back. I mean, I don't take anything back that happened in my life.
Can't.
Well, and really, really don't want to. It's every reason why I am right here today with you, sitting in this chair, and I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
Did you always think that way, though?
No, God, no.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a while to figure out how to think that way.
Right.
That regrets are useless. They're just useless. Just act different.
Yeah. Just you know.
Accept it.
Well, and what is the definition of a crazy person is making the same mistakes.
Over and over again, expecting different results.
Exactly.
I think that's I hear that definition a lot and I've used it myself, but I'm not sure where it comes from. I think, do you know what I mean?
I don't know who says it.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a crazy person that said it.
Well, I think I've heard it in recovery and I've heard it, and it sort of makes sense. But sometimes you're doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Maybe one day you'll get different results.
No, you won't.
Okay. So I'm crazy. Right.
Whatever. I feel like anything's possible.
Was that your first acting job? The batteries?
Yes. No, I think my first acting job was How to Get Away with Murdering Your Parents, like some crazy movie of the week.
Yeah.
That I had one line. And I was actually cut out of the movie, but you can still hear my voice saying, it's The Day My Parents Ran Away.
Oh.
But it was about the, it was.
How old were you?
Oh, God, I don't even remember. 23?
Really?
Maybe?
So that's when it all started? And were you playing younger parts?
Yes.
That's how it goes?
That's when I was playing like 18,
right.
You know?
How long did you
16.
Do that for? You just stopped doing that, right?
Like I a just couple stopped years ago? Doing that, yeah.
You're playing like 23, 24.
Yes, exactly. Okay. I'll never forget the day I got the call, and they're like, they want you to play 35. And I remember I was 35 at the time, and I said, what? No, that's actually how old I am. And, you know, I had to
What's
have that.
Happening?
I had that talk with my manager. They're like, well, Constance, here's the deal.
Oh, my God.
The time has come when you are going to actually play your age. I was like, wow, I've aged into myself.
Yeah.
Is what happens.
And that's when everything got good, right?
Yeah. I do think that the older I got, the parts did get better.
Like, do you go through periods where, like, is there something you want to do that you're not doing? Do you like?
Yeah. Well, I want to go into directing. I've been directing theater lately.
Really? Where do you direct theater?
I do it with this, the Blank Theater in Hollywood, in West Hollywood. They do a Young Playwrights Festival every summer where all the playwrights are under the age of 18 and they're one act plays. It's only in the month of June. And it's right now the one time I have the time to go in and rehearse for a couple of weeks. And I used to act in them, but I haven't had as much time to do. And also because mostly they write younger characters, these kids. So I've been directing, I'm directing my third one this year. And it's, I love directing. I would love to direct more and more and more.
Theater.
Theater. No, I would do anything. I'll do television. I'll do film. I just got to, I'm going to have to, I know.
It's like, how do you get into that?
Well, you have to shadow, you know, people have to feel that you're capable.
Right. I think you know a guy that directs things.
I do.
Yeah. He lives in your house.
I know. I'm going to shadow him. I could shadow him.
Well, you should let him get his big break first. let him get his footing
in
the world of movies and television.
But I will say that's the hardest part, though, is because he is a director, and he's such a good director. And whenever I tell him I'm going to direct something, he's definitely supportive, but there's also this,
tough,
so
man.
you're gonna try and tackle this now?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Can I have anything?
Exactly.
Competitiveness is rough.
Yeah.
But see, that was the thing I was getting at with the kid and being somebody who's a sort of a show person. Do you ever have that moment where I don't have kids, and it's probably better off. You know, because there's a part of me that's sort of like, so you think you're a hot shot because you're a kid? Do you? What do you think? Like, and that's not a good thing to have competitive. And I think my father was competitive with me from early on. That just sort of like, no, what's the big deal, kid?
Right.
Do you fight with that?
You know, I do and I don't. I mean, I do, but I stop myself.
Right. But I think that's part of parents thing. You have to admit that you have these moments, but you just don't act, you don't act like an idiot.
No. And I think for me, what's funny is that Colette is very actually artistic, like an incredible artist. And I love watching it and knowing, like, she's growing up in a world that I did not grow up in. Like, she's going on sets, you know, she's meeting people. And it's like, that's the stuff that fascinates me, is how is that going to influence her? Like, can she, like, is she going to be in the business because that's what she grew up around?
Do you want her to be in the business?
I don't. I'm not definitely not pushing her that way.
You should keep her off of
all.
Those sets.
Well, I know. But if she does want to be an actor, I'll be supportive. But I'm definitely not putting her into anything until she has, the right mindset to say, this is what I want to do
100%. When she's 8 or 9?
No, that's 10, I'm going to wait until she's like 11. 13, 14, 15, 30, maybe 30 might be. But she, the funniest thing that I found with her, which is going to be admitting something pretty sad, is, she's blonde hair, green eyes. She's tall.
Yeah.
And I would like, when I started realizing that, I was like, you know what? Fuck you, man. I'm short. I'm a brunette. I don't have long legs. And, I was like, she's the girl that when I was in high school, I was like, oh, look at her. She's so pretty.
Now she's in the house.
Now she's in my house. That's right.
Where'd she get that stuff from, your husband?
Russ, yeah. Because he's like blonde, blue eyes, tall.
Thank God those genes won out, right?
That's what I say. She has his looks and my personality. So
perfect.
I feel like it's going to go very far.
Oh, that's great.
She's going to go very far.
My producer said he saw you at the Correspondents' Dinner. Explain to me what that was about.
Okay, so for me, that's the third year I've gone to that dinner.
What is the organization that you're part of?
Well, the last 2 years, I went with the Creative Coalition, which is what Haley Joel went with as well. So the Creative Coalition is a nonprofit organization that is fighting to keep arts funding and education. Mm-hmm. And they're using celebrity voices. They're using anybody that can raise awareness and try and, get the government to keep funding arts and why it's so important.
Right.
Because they're taking it out of everywhere.
Right.
So they get these this incredible group of actors from all different mediums, television, film, theater writers, producers, whatever they can get, and you go to Capitol Hill and you meet with senators and you talk to them about why arts in education is so important.
Yeah.
And I did it for the first time last year, and it was unbelievably fulfilling and depressing because, unfortunately, you know, the Republicans, I hate to call them out, but they don't get it. Yeah, you know,
right.
And it's hard, and they think that we're trying to fight to give us money, and it's like, no, we're here because we had the arts.
Yeah,
I don't want your money. I want the money to go to my kids.
Right.
I want the money to go to your kids so that they have communication skills and they know how to, you know, stand up in front of a room and not piss themselves
and engage their creativity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I've gone with them for the last 2 years, and then the first year I went as a House of Cards cast member because House of Cards was huge in DC.
They love it.
They love it so much.
They do?
They do. They really do. And it's so fun being on a political show and being in Washington.
Yeah?
Oh, my God.
Because you're a real rock star?
Oh, the real White House correspondents. I mean, they come up to me and they're just like, thank you for making us look so cool. I'm like, really? I did that? Okay. You know? And I mean, I got to meet David Carr before he passed away. And he was so influential on House of Cards. I would have, you know, those are, again, relationships that I would have never had I not been on that type of show.
Whose brainchild is the House of Cards?
Bo Willimon.
Yeah.
Who wrote Ides of March.
Oh, yeah. And Kevin Spacey, working with him is great.
Amazing. I mean, he really can't do no wrong.
He's something, huh?
He is incredible. He's incredible. The first time I met him, it was our first table read of the first episode. And I remember he was like in the greeting line when we were all walking in, and I was like, okay, all right, just act cool.
Yeah.
You know, and I walk up to him and I'm like, hi, Kevin, so nice to meet you. My name's Constance Zimmer. And before I could get out my last name, he's like, I know who you are. I was like, okay. And then I just didn't know what else to say. I was like, well, there went my bit.
Was it mean or was it just...
No, it was just kind of like, I mean, he was just, he is not mean. He is so present and just in your face and eye contact that it's this, his confidence that is, might seem terrifying because it's just there and it's so on the surface. And I just, that was all, I didn't know what else to say after that. I had nothing else to say.
When you do scenes with him, is he one of the actors where you're like, holy shit, this is like, you know, this is great?
Oh, 100%. 100%.
When you train to be an actor, like at Pasadena or at the Art Academy, or what was it?
American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
The American Academy of Dramatic
Arts. The AADA.
So are all the skills that you have now outside of just experience? I mean, did you learn anything there?
You know, the American Academy was like a fame school, and it was the type of school where you go and you learn everything at once. You do Shakespeare, scene study, emotional training of how to cry on, you know, all this crap. Mm. But it really, I think, was truthfully being in the business and auditioning and doing cold reading classes where I learned the most, because I studied with this coach named Brian Reese, who was all about cold reading. Because that's what you're bringing into a room, is the sides they've given you. And I will never forget the first thing he said when we had class was, he said, I'm going to say something to all of you here and half of you are going to leave. But the reality of this business is this. They don't care where you're coming from, where you're going to, what your motivation is. They care if they want you at their rap party. And there was all these, like, hands went up and they were like, that's, you know, that's bullshit. I studied at Juilliard and, you know, I was at NYU and, you know, they do care and it da 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 da. And he said, all of that work and all of your education matters when you're on the set. But when you walk into that room to audition, you better be likable, because nobody wants to be on a set for 3 months with an asshole who just happens to be talented.
Unless they're a big star.
That's true. Because there are a lot of assholes on sets. That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So outside of Kevin, who was like, have you worked with your heroes before?
Well, I would say also, I mean, working with David Fincher was, that to me was like, I did have a feeling of, all right, if this is it, if my career is done, I'm okay. I'm good. I'm good.
Well, what made him so amazing? I mean, like when you work with a director, I mean, like I've seen directors work, but I don't have no experience with film, and I only have my own experience on my own TV show. But like, what is it? What's so impressive, or what makes it connect so deeply?
You know, none of us, I never knew David Fincher as a person. I just knew him as a director, and I knew he was incredible. And you hear all these stories and you're terrified to meet him, and then you meet him and he's the coolest person I've ever met. And that connected with being somebody that's so talented. And what he is he is so specific. And I appreciate specificity so much, because I told you, OCD.
Right.
But I mean, if he was in this room, every single tiny thing that is in this room would matter to him. Even this, like, I don't even know what this is. This is like one of those things for an IKEA cabinet.
Yeah.
One of those wrenches.
Yeah. Okay.
What are those things called?
Right.
But you know, he
Allen
would. Allen wrench. Thank you. It
a
would matter.
One.
It would matter to him what the angle it was, where it was pointed. You know, he wants everything as real and as organic as possible, to not seem like it's actors in a scene.
Uh-huh.
And that to me is, I mean, it's hard to explain, because some people hate that and some people love it. And
but does he do that in the direction as well? Or like outside of set deck or the framing of something?
No, of course. But he wants you to be as real as possible within the character you are playing.
And how do you get that? I mean,
he's been known to just break people down.
Uh-huh.
And to get that, he will do whatever it takes to get you
while
to
you're
stop
in the scene
acting,
or pull you aside.
No, while you're in the scene, that's always the best, because then it's always on film.
Well, like, cut. Could you do it again? But you know, stop it.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah. But I just, you know, you have to go in. When you go, I knew what to do with him as a director. I knew that he just wants you to not act, like, just be, like, embody the character. And which is very hard to do, because, I mean, we're acting.
Right.
It's kind of hard to explain. I don't really know if I'm doing a good job of explaining
it. No, I understand it, but it has to.
You also trust him.
Right.
Like, 150%. So if he says to me, you know, on this line, don't pick up your pencil, like, just do it directly at her. Never move your eyes. Never change your facial structure. Don't move your eyebrows. You know, he's very specific.
Wow.
And he's like, you're moving your eyebrows. Don't move your eyebrows.
Wow.
And so all of a sudden, you're concentrating on the fact that you don't want to move your eyebrows, that it's making you not concentrate on, quote unquote, acting.
Ah, clever.
Mm-hmm. See? He's clever like
got
that.
Got tricks.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Good. Well, I'm excited for you with all the things
I can tell
that are happening right now. It's like June is Constance Zimmer month.
I know, that was very sweet. A reporter said, I think we need to call this the summer of Zimmer.
I hope you get through it.
Appreciate
it. It was nice talking to you.
You too.
Did you have fun? Was this all right?
Oh my God, it's the best.
All right, good.
I would do this every day.
Okay, well, maybe we can make that happen.
We can make it like a weekly occurrence. A week in the life of Constance Zimmer.
Okay, all right. Maybe we should
today
do the cameras.
Today I picked up poop. Right.
Okay. Yeah. No, well,
I do that too.
That's not a great pitch.
It's not. Hot girls picking up poop.
Okay.
That was my one of my husband's idea for a book. Because in New York, there's all these like beautiful models and, you know, celebrities, and they're all walking around and they're just picking up shit.
Well, when's that book happening?
I don't know.
Well,
we're
now
gonna make
you better,
it happen.
Well, you just mentioned it out loud. Someone's going to do it. I wonder if there's a website. We'll look in a minute.
We will.
All right, that's our show. I love her. I love you. Thank you, Chicago, for your amazing night and the specials. I think it's going to look great, and I couldn't have done it without you. Okay? Even the drunk lady and all the nice people. I'm trying to stay open-hearted to everybody. Please go to WTFpod.com/calendar to hook up with tickets in Red Bank, New Jersey, Huntington, New York, Port Chester, New York, the BAM Opera House, Boulder, Denver, Portland, Oregon, two shows. So do that. Come see me.
I'm going to stay funny throughout this tour, even though I did the special, even though I did it. I can't make any guitar noises. Though in Cleveland, all the Earthquaker people came. All the pedal nerds came to my show. Like 10 of them. The makers of those things. Boomer lives!
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.